It's JT the Brick on Fox Sports 98.9 and 1340 AM.
We're building a brand here every day at 4 o'clock.
JT, live in Vegas.
I'm a dreamer, man. Call me a rah-rah guy. I love that. This is all a joke, everybody. I'm just practicing for something a couple of years in advance while other people are looking around and don't get what's coming.
It's JT the Brick talking Raiders, Golden Knights.
He shoots, he scores! Vegas wins in overtime! David Perron, 5-4, Golden Knights!
UNLV.
You don't want me talking UNLV football today, correct? I take the high road in life, dude.
That was a terrible call!
I like my team.
Judge Homer, get up!
This show, I can take calls. The number is 876-1340.
I always enjoy talking football. I'll attack all sports, Mr. JT. Thanks for the Grimaldi coupon I got last week.
I take the high road in life, dude. We're building a brand here every day at 4 o'clock.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Good to have you, JT, with you as we are ready, 1 hour away from the NFL schedule release, which is really one of my favorite days of the year, because I get on the road, love to get on the road, and you should get on the road locally here in town. PT's, all the Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's, the Stratosphere. The show's always brought to you by Golden Gaming with all their great April specials. Heading into May now, I think we're pretty comfortable with the Golden Knights, and hopefully this team extends themselves deep into the playoffs, and we have a lot more hockey to talk about as we kick off the show tonight. We know who the opponent will be for the Golden Knights. Golden Knights with home ice in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs with the San Jose Sharks. We'll get into that. A matter of fact, I had to pump the brakes today. We booked the show ahead for next week. I got a lot of contacts within the Sharks from being up in the Bay Area all these years. And we'll have a lot of good guests next week from a Sharks perspective to get to know this team a little bit for the fans who don't know this team and how good they can be. Actually, I thought the Kings were better than the Sharks heading into the playoffs. So I don't know if that's good or bad, or I don't want to jinx anything, but I had the Golden Knights winning the first round in six, and I'll stick it again with six games. I think we're looking at a better team with the Golden Knights, obviously. But the Sharks, veterans, big guys on defense, physicality. They do have a couple of guys, I believe, that can score a little bit faster than what the Kings had on offense. But same old story. If the Golden Knights play at their level, I think they win the series probably in six games if they can do it earlier. It's just great. Bobby, who produces the show, and I were talking beforehand that I cannot believe we're waiting to find out the schedule. It adds perfectly to this conversation that we've been having all year with this hockey team. I mean, you can't make this up. We don't even know when the games are yet because the NHL is holding back the Golden Knights and the Sharks, holding them back knowing that they can't start this series the next couple of days, because other series still have 3 to 4 games left. So if someone would have pulled you aside before the start of the year and said, the Knights are going to go to the playoffs, you would have said, how? Then they said they're going to win in the first round in a sweep. You go, what? And then they're going to have home ice in the second round. You'd say, hold on. And then you would say, we don't even know what the schedule is going to be because we have to wait for the rest of the league to catch up. The rest of the league has to catch up to the Golden Knights. I'd like to hear from some hockey fans every day on the show. We've worked really hard here behind the scenes to give you hockey content and to get you going on the phones. Radio shows don't work without interactive fans who know what they're talking about. This is your home at this time of night to talk hockey as this team continues to play. When they go away, hockey's going to go away quickly. Because hockey's gone away nationally on national radio for years, and now it's back locally in Vegas, and I think we should take advantage of it. 876-1340. We have one more gift box to give away from NHL Television Network, which was really cool. We gave away four. We got one more. Really to the best caller who could look ahead and give me something about the Sharks, 876-1340. If you want to get in. For San Jose, again, they've been waiting, and I thought that they should have had a cup or two by now. This is a team that is really good over the last decade, and they continue to go to the playoffs, and they're the classic team that flames out in the playoffs. So they've knocked on the door many times recently with a very good team that should have got. They got to a cup final. They came up short. They get in the West, and they find a way to lose. I don't know. I know a lot of Shark fans up there that think they're going to win this series because of the experience and the fact that they've been close over the last couple of years. What does that have to do with the Golden Knights? Nothing. That doesn't affect the Golden Knights at all. Golden Knights are just going to play their game. But for the Sharks, that's a perfect fan base. And what I'm telling you, bigger market. Remember, the Bay Area lost their football team to us in Vegas in a couple of years. And they're a pretty rabid hockey community up there. And if they lose to the future home of the Raiders in regards to the Vegas Golden Knights, the Bay Area is going to be pretty upset going forward. And this is a team that I think has the ability to win the cup if they get by the Vegas Golden Knights. So we'll talk more about this as we're ready to go. Let's start off with how the Sharks were able to take advantage of the Ducks and beat them easily in this past series. Another blowout. 4-0. The Sharks were electric against the Ducks.
Getzlaf gets it up the boards. Kept in. Vlasic the shot. Tipped in front. Score! Tomas Hertl is in front of it. Kitcher was on the side of the goal, and Hertl keeps that shot from a point home. The Sharks 2, the Ducks 1, with 10:51 remaining in the game.
I mean, they just dominated the Ducks. The Ducks are a good team. They just pushed them around. They were great. They very similar series, same outcome, 4-0. San Jose, the way Vegas advanced in the first round. Give this team a lot of credit. They got awesome momentum going forward.
There's 8 seconds to go in the third. It's back at the Anaheim line. One last chance, a giveaway by the Ducks. 2 seconds left, one, and that's it. For the second time in San Jose Sharks history, they have swept a playoff series. Final score in Game 4, the Sharks 2, the Ducks 1, and now it's time for the Sharks to bring on the Vegas Golden Knights for Round 2 of the playoffs.
Second time in the history of their franchise, 20-plus years, that they get a shutout victory, 4-0, and the Golden Knights did it the first time they ever made it to the playoffs. That's the second time in the history of the franchise, and your Vegas Golden Knights were able to do that right out of the gate. Truly amazing there. So Sharks will be a worthy opponent. That's Dan Rusinowski on the call. He'll join us next week. We'll have the play-by-play guys, the analyst. We'll get you into that series when they announce it, and I'm just hoping that I get a weekend game. Give me a Thursday, Saturday, or a Friday, Sunday. I'm excited to get back out to the rink at T-Mobile and watch these guys get after it. 876-1340 on Twitter at JT the Brick, on Facebook at JT the Brick. Tyler, start us off on the flagship of the Golden Knights. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today, brother?
Good, thank you.
I'm doing good, yeah, man. So the San Jose Sharks, I've been watching them a lot this year. I'm a Golden Knights fan, of course, but watching them, they're kind of, they remind me of like the Clippers of the NHL.
Yeah.
Very good. Very flashy, but at times can really taper off and do have ability to choke in the playoffs. Now, the Golden Knights have been, to me, leaps and bounds better than them all year. As far as offensively, defensively, transitions, they have been cream of the crop with them. But for some reason, the Sharks think they can play with us. They think they can play with us. They think they can come take a game from us. But I think when we play them next week, man, we're going to beat them in five.
Yeah, I think five, I could see why you would say five after winning a series against the Kings, who I thought were better than the Sharks, and beating them in a shutout. But this is an experienced team with Joe Pavelski. When you look at the guys that they have, Martin Jones in goal is playing really well. He was awesome against the Ducks, but he's not Fleury. And the rest of this team, Logan Couture, they got good players. They got experienced players. I hate to bring up this point again, but most of the teams that are left, Brett Burns, one of the best defensive players in all of hockey. Most of the teams that are left, from Nashville to Pittsburgh to Winnipeg, they're all more experienced than the Golden Knights. So as much as the Golden Knights are winning in dominant fashion and are fast and have this unbelievable chemistry, the other locker room is looking at this team going, we're going to beat them. They don't have experience. They haven't been here before. We have. And I'm trying to bring that clarity and balance to the broadcast. These other teams respect how good the Knights are, but they're not afraid of them because they believe they have better players and they're more experienced. And that's really the vibe in locker rooms around the league. So if the Knights keep winning and they keep winning in dominant fashion, I think everybody will get the message. But these are really rough, tough hockey guys. They are not scared of anybody on the Golden Knights other than, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury, who's one of the best goaltenders that we've seen in the last 20 years. This is a battle-tested Shark team that has been there before recently, very similar to the Kings, who have won two of the last six Stanley Cups. Problem is the Sharks just choke a little bit more than the Kings in the postseason. Shane, you're up next on the flagship of the Knights. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Anyway, I'm originally from South Jersey, and I live in Henderson for like the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up watching the Devils and the Flyers and seen a lot of good hockey. And I got to be really honest with you, man. The Vegas Knights have come on so strong towards the end of the season, especially in March, where I thought that was their toughest part of the schedule because they were playing like every other day. And I really think that there's going to be they're a force to be reckoned with, man. I don't know that much about the Sharks, but the way these guys are playing as a unit, they play good defense, they play good offense, and they're playing a lot like the old New Jersey Devils did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right back when Brodeur was in goal.
I think that's a really good comparison.
Excellent defense, man.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Again, thanks for the call. That the Devils comparison with Brodeur in net, a Hall of Famer, one of the all-time greats, similar to Fleury, is true. But the Devils were more defensive focused than the Golden Knights. The Golden Knights are more of a breakout offensive team. And obviously their defense is looking better when you have a goaltender like that. And it's not a weakness. Vegas's defense is not a weakness. But teams like the Sharks and especially the Kings had better defensive players. No debate. They have more accomplished and recognized all-star defensive players than on the Vegas Golden Knights. And the Shark team was pretty good this year. Remember, in the Pacific, the Golden Knights won the Pacific with 109 points. It was the Ducks at 101 and then the Sharks at 100 points. So the Sharks are really good and battle-tested. And San Jose was 25-13-3 at home. And really solid on the road, too. They had 20 wins on the road, and that was more than the Ducks, who were the higher seed. So they're not going to be nervous. They're well-coached. They're physical. Penalties are going to be at a premium here. And I just think the Vegas Golden Knights are better because of those four lines that they swing out there. Their third and fourth line is clearly better than what the Sharks will put up there. And we'll do a really good job, I believe, getting you ready for the coverage with the Sharks with all the guests we have lined up next week. I'm still pinching myself saying next week that we have to sit around. I mean, if the game was tomorrow or Saturday, I'd have guests on loaded up from there. And I talked to guys today. They're like, can we do this next week? We just won last night. No problem. James, thanks for calling the show. We appreciate it. What's on your mind?
Just looking at the teams, you know, I would say hands down, Jonathan Quick, much better goaltender than Martin is.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Quick is the only reason that we didn't blow the Kings out every game. We came at this hard. They were had it in their mind that we weren't good enough. You know, everyone should have been there. They had it in their mind that we weren't going to do anything. If it wasn't for Jonathan Quick, we would have blown them out in our sweep of them.
Yeah, and I couldn't disagree with you more. Thanks for the call. I mean, that's ridiculous. You wouldn't have blown them out. You wouldn't have blown out the Kings. The reason why these games were 1-0 and 2-1 is because the Kings are very good. I mean, come on, to talk about blowing out, you weren't going to beat the Kings 5-1 and 6-0. That wasn't going to happen. The Kings have had a lot more. Greater moments in their franchise. the Golden Knights have advanced to the second round of the postseason. The Kings have won two recent Stanley Cups, and they're the only team ever to lose their first three games in the first round and win the Cup. So blowouts, I don't know about that. I think the Knights are that type of team that they can win in a blowout because they're so fast and explosive, and they score in bunches. I don't see that with San Jose. I never saw that coming with the Kings. But defense, what happens with defense is too, is that defensive teams wear you out for the next round. And what's so cool about this break that the Knights are getting is the physicality of the Kings series is enough to wear you out. It felt like the Golden Knights played in a 5 or 6 game series, even though they won in 4. The fact that they're not having mandatory practices, they're getting a couple of days off here, is really sharp, I think, by Gallant to get these guys out of hockey for a couple of days, get them off their feet, let them rest, and then ramp them up when the schedule comes out and really get them peaking again. Because the Golden Knights peaked in that first round. We'll get back to your hockey calls again. You're always welcome to call if you're a hockey fan. Love hearing from all the new hockey fans, 876-1340. Want to quickly go to something that happened last night with LeBron James. I'm going to get to the highlights later on. But LeBron had a comment on Greg Popovich's wife passing after the game. And there's a big conspiracy going on about, was he aware of this question? Was this a bad question taken by the TNT crew, the female reporter who asked them this immediately following the game?
LeBron, during this game, we got the really devastating news. The Spurs announced that Aaron, Coach Popovich's wife, officially passed away. I know you're close with Pop. Any words or thoughts you'd like to share with him?
Obviously, I'm a huge Pop fan. I love Pop. That's such a tragedy, and you know, my best wishes goes out to Pop and his family. I know that's devastating news, and I mean, the NBA family, we all stick together. I know we compete every night, but something like this happens, it puts everything in perspective. So, you know, I send my well wishes and my prayers up to the heavens above. I know the man above never makes a mistake, even when you sometimes have to ask why, but. That's just terrible news, and best of luck to Pop, man, and everybody in San Antonio, the whole Spurs family. That's all I can say, Allie.
All right, that was Allie from TNT. I thought it was an inappropriate question. I really did, and we were watching live. I was on the air last night when that happened, and then the phones opened up and flooded, and there were a lot of people who called in really upset. And then today, people kind of backtracked it, saying that she told LeBron in his ear that she was going to go there. But it was a very uncomfortable question to ask a player on the court about the death of someone immediately following the game. It typically doesn't happen that way. I don't think you can recall ever in your lifetime that a baseball player hit a walk-off home run and he's standing outside the dugout and someone asked that type of question. NFL game-winning catch. All of a sudden, you get that player in the end zone and you ask him about the death of someone. So I'd like your opinion on that last night, because it was a big moment in broadcasting, because no one's ever done that before at that magnitude. And the blowback did not stop all last night. TNT is kind of backtracking with it now. And I think you're going to see something come out of here in the next couple of days about what is appropriate or not. And I talk to my dad every day. He's going to be 80 coming up here. And he's the reason I'm on the radio. He's a diehard sports fan. And he always cracks up saying that most sideline reporters, including myself, I do that for the Raiders in the preseason, we have nothing to say. It's the same old lame questions. How'd you do that? How'd you come back? What went through your mind when you were down 11 heading into the fourth quarter? The most ridiculous questions you could ever hear. Well, last night, that question really got people talking. Want to mention quickly, Utah, Donovan Mitchell had a monster game last night, which was the key to Utah beating OKC. Really important moment to extend that series, because I think Utah matches up great against Golden State eventually.
They get it into Mitchell, guarded by Paul George. He attacks, the spin, the score from Donovan! Oh, Donovan!
Yeah, that was a great game last night. In the fourth quarter, with 6 minutes to go, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, and Paul George were a combined 0-for-14. 0-for-14, three future Hall of Famers in a game at home to go up 2-0, all fell apart as this kid Mitchell, who should be the Rookie of the Year, absolutely took over the game and dominated. But the last night's story was, no doubt about it, LeBron James. LeBron had a monster night as everybody was questioning him going into that game. I'm having a difficult time now in 2018 in sports radio, because there's so much bogus content on radio, and I don't talk about rumors much, but just a day ago, people were sitting there mocking LeBron. Is he done? Right? Is he done? Is this the beginning of the end? Does he have anything left? And then he goes out and has the greatest first quarter he's ever had in the history of a playoff game, in his entire career, in his 15th year. So we go back every day, the seesaw, like at a nursery school. The seesaw goes up and down. Is LeBron a villain today? Is he the greatest of all time? Is LeBron a bad guy? Is LeBron the best thing that ever happened to us? Well, last night he was absolutely exceptional, and I think Cleveland will win that series. Steve, on LeBron James on Fox Sports Radio. Go ahead.
Hello, JT. I'd just like to comment on that. I did see it last night, and I did think it was a real tough question, but then when it came out that she whispered in his ear she was going to ask him about that and was it okay, it felt different. It felt like it was okay to ask it, because he could have said, please, Allie, no.
Yeah, but let me stop you. Hold on. Let me stop you for a second. You have to admit it was uncomfortable. The question is, either way, is that an appropriate time to ask an athlete before he gets to the shower, before he goes to the podium? Isn't that a better time to let him take a shower, get dressed, and go to the podium and ask him that question other than 30 seconds after he wins the game? We're talking about the timing of it.
Okay. You know what? You're right about that, and I would say a 90% of athletes, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, hockey, I would agree with you. Mm-hmm. But just like you said before I came on, LeBron, hot one day, done the next. And I think he's different.
Yeah, well, appreciate the call. Thank you. What's interesting about LeBron is tight with Pop. He's really tight with Popovich. They go back to his Olympic days when Pop's an assistant and all the series that they played against each other. The question for me, and I really appreciate that call, is when is it appropriate for the sideline reporter to make news? Right? Isn't that the question that makes the most sense? When does the sideline reporter stay and just follow protocol and ask questions, or are we talking about death? I've been doing this my whole life. You know, I've never seen that before. So again, I don't think she deserves to be suspended. I'm not saying it was a completely inappropriate question, but you have to admit, if you watch sports as much as we all do, you've never seen anything like that before. Maybe a coach talking about the death of a player's parent or someone like that. But for LeBron James, I just thought that was very inappropriate last night because of the timing for the reporter who asked that question. 876-1340 is our number. We're going to talk to Gilbert Manzano coming up here in a little bit. He's got the cover story on Canelo Alvarez and the ban, but also he covers the Raiders and the schedule will come out with the silver and black. We know when the Raiders are playing in London, and I kind of know a couple of their primetime games, but I'll wait out of respect to the silver and black till the top of the hour when that comes out. Hey, if you're a Raider fan, you live in Vegas, what's the one game you're going to on the road this year? I got to hear that.
Swing and a drive, well hit to left. Sierra going back to the wall. She is gone. A grand slam for Yoenis Cespedes. And the Mets have busted this thing wide open here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
The Mets. I grew up 20 minutes from Shea Stadium, so my dad made the right decision, made me a Yankee fan growing up as a kid, but I got to give the Mets credit as we bring in Josh Towers, former MLB pitcher, great baseball insider here on Fox Sports Radio. Josh, are you a believer of the Metsies? Off to a good start this year. We knew they had pitching, but those bats have been extremely hot.
Hey, I'm jealous of you, buddy, growing up 20 minutes from Shea Stadium. I grew up a Mets fan, man. That's all I wanted to be my whole life, with Darryl Strawberry. So that's pretty cool. I'm jealous. Listen, we knew the pitching staff was going to be awesome, and they got that bullpen. Unlike the Yankees bullpen that we know is amazing, this Mets bullpen is equally as good, and we don't know these kids yet. You know, you got Paul Sewald, Bishop Gorman kid out of Vegas. We got Robert Gsellman and Seth Lugo, who could easily be frontline starters, in my opinion, to fill that bullpen in with the rest of the guys, Familia. That bullpen and that staff is real, and then I'm surprised and I'm pleased. But I'm surprised that the offense is as good as it is right now.
Josh Towers is our guest. Josh, I want to talk to you about being behind in the standings early in April. The Yankees are 6 games behind the Red Sox, and the Nationals, who are under 500, are 6 games in the loss column behind the Mets. Take me back to your career in the clubhouse early in the season. When you're down 6, 7, 8 games, you know that's going to take at least 2 to 3 weeks to dig out of that hole when it comes to a calendar. You need the winning team to lose a bunch of games and hope you go on a winning streak. When does the pressure creep into the clubhouse where you start noticing?
It starts to creep, honestly, I would say in August, to where you start to really start to focus in and see where you're at. But you know, coming in, you know, you go to Fenway, it's one of the best places. You go to Fenway, and they have the standings for our division up on the board. So you know where you're at all times when you're going and playing a 4-game set there. So you know that if I'm playing a 4-game set, if I'm with Toronto, I'm playing a 4-game set in Boston, I got to take 3 of these if I'm this far behind right now. So you can make up some serious ground in them head-to-head matchups right away. Those become the really, really important ones. But you really want to focus on the reality of just winning series. I don't have to go 8-1 or 9-1 in my next 10. I don't have to do anything spectacular like that. If I can take 2 out of 3 and 3 out of 4, then because the season's such a 6-month, such a long season, that I know over time that I'm going to be where I want to be. But if you start to find yourself losing series, then you're in a little bit of trouble. But this is too early to really panic with some of the teams. I'm not worried about the Yankees. I'm not worried about the Nationals, especially when they get Murphy back. I am worried about teams like Baltimore, though, JT. I'll tell you, that team's it's headed in the wrong direction fast, man.
Josh Towers is our guest. Josh, let's stay with Fenway for a second. Take our listeners back. What was it like coming in with the teams that you played on in the past when you went in there with as an Oriole or a Blue Jay or a Yankee and you land at Logan, you get to the hotel, and you know you're in Boston for 3 or 4 nights, knowing how rabid that city is, how much they love baseball, and those bus rides into Fenway Park when you get there. So much history seeping around that ballpark.
Man, I can tell you, I can take this interview on for hours telling you about everything that, that comes with going to Fenway. I hated Boston, to be honest with you. It wasn't my favorite place to go, but there's so many cool things about it. One of the this is off the wall, but one of the most important and the things we enjoyed the most was the hotel, because it was the best bed in all of baseball. You got the best night's sleep at that hotel, so that was awesome. But one of my favorite things about Fenway was going for a jog around the town and going to the colleges and going and seeing the institutes, and there's a there's an open grass area somewhere not too far from the stadium where people are just out there sitting, reading books, having picnics, on breaks from class, and you get to jog and see the whole city, and it really is a beautiful place. And then, obviously, you know, you get the honor. Some of us did. I was fortunate enough to have the honor to be able to be invited underneath the Green Monster and to sign one of the pillars back underneath. Going in, it's really special because you start to see everybody's autographs and you see the history of it. But coming out was just a completely different feeling because now you've got to see this beautiful historic field of Fenway Park. It's the only place outside of Tampa. I didn't play in that division. But, you know, history is in love with the game of baseball and in sports in general. And like New York Yankees, Boston does a great job of taking you back in time. And so you respect it so much more.
Josh Towers, former big league pitcher, joins us every week right here on Fox Sports Radio. Where was the worst place to play and travel to?
Well, playing-wise, I loved it more than anything. It was Oakland, but going to that stadium was the worst because it just getting there was a pain in the butt. You duck fights if you took the BART in. Sometimes you would just take the bus. There's people that wanted to fight. Somebody was always cussing you out, that's for sure. If the folks wore your jersey in the stands, they were definitely getting yelled at. So I don't have too many good things to say about Oakland in general, except for I wish I could pitch there every single day of my life.
Mookie Betts is batting .390. We mentioned the Red Sox as we start.
Yes, he is.
Joe Mauer is batting .364. Look at in the National League, some of the bigger names out there. Matt Kemp with the Dodgers, .347. I like taking a look at guys who are leading the league early, especially when the weather's bad. Bryce Harper leads the National League with 8 home runs. That leads Major League Baseball. And Jed Lowry of Oakland, who you just mentioned, 6 home runs. Mike Trout has 6, and also from Gorman, Joey Gallo there. Do you feel like, and where you stand, Josh, because you're very opinionated when it comes to this, with the with what we're dealing with now with the baseball being wound too tight last year, some of these pitchers early on in the tough weather giving up really big home runs. I look around this league and I wonder, is this going to be a massive home run season or a short one? Because there's a lot of big names who haven't gotten out of the gate quickly in April.
I think the weather is affecting a lot of these guys. It's a little colder this year, JT, yes, than it is in years past. But we experience this every few years, so it's not like we're unaccustomed to it. The home run numbers are going to stay up because the style of hitting has changed. No one cares about hitting for average except for a few guys like you mentioned. And of course, outside of Mookie Betts, you mentioned veterans. You mentioned Matt Kemp and Joe Mauer's, the guys who've been doing it for years, who still have that slightly, and I can't call it old school, but slightly old school mentality of hitting to where they actually understand how to backspin the ball. The rest of these guys are just hitting home runs, and if they strike out, it's okay. So we're still going to see averages down and home runs up just like we did last year. And then you got to remember that these kids are coming to baseball, the big leagues, a lot younger these days. They got rid of the veterans, And travel ball, this travel ball era is finally catching up to the big leagues to where these kids play travel ball. You got to remember, travel ball doesn't teach you anything. They sell their soul to win because it's money-based. So these kids aren't learning as much baseball in their youth, and now they're trying to learn the game of baseball in the major leagues at a young age. It's very, very difficult. So you're seeing them have to fall on their face in the big leagues while they're trying to do it. And I don't appreciate it personally. I think that they should change the way they're doing it. That's why I'm so opinionated. But that's why we see averages down. There's very few Joe Mauers. There's very few Jose Altuves and Matt Kemp. And that's why I appreciate Mookie Betts, because he's new school, but the art of hitting, he actually studies the art of hitting, and I'm starting to appreciate this kid. I like him.
Wrapping it up with Josh Towers, the news today, Major League Baseball and the NBA are in discussions to divest their financial interest in daily fantasy sports, but they plan to remain partners with DraftKings and FanDuel. I wanted your opinion on that now, as you're an alumni of baseball and a former player. In a statement to ESPN, Major League Baseball said, quote, "While we have initiated discussions regarding potential changes to the structure of our relationship, we look forward to continuing our valued partnership with DraftKings." Do you think this is a smart move for Major League Baseball when it comes to being a partner in the world of fantasy and gaming?
I think at some point they're going to have to accept the reality of what is our culture. I mean, look what this stuff does for the NFL. I would like to say that half of the NFL money, fans, ratings would go away if they didn't have fantasy sports. I mean, that's what's bringing people. And so you got these groups coming together every Sunday to watch NFL where they never would have did it before. They're buying jerseys and they're buying team shirts, and it's a beautiful thing. So I think that they do have to embrace this at some point, but there is that fine line, because these guys aren't allowed to gamble. These guys aren't allowed. Like, I have friends, Frank Thomas wouldn't even step foot in a sports book. He didn't want to be anywhere affiliated with it because he didn't want people to associate him with gambling, trying to get into the Hall of Fame, and I respect that. I can't get Troy Tulowitzki on my show, JT, because we're associated with gambling. He doesn't want to be associated with it. So there's a fine line that the Major League Baseball and the NBA is going to have to really look into and not cross when it comes to this, because it is touchy. We sign things that say we won't gamble, but then you're going to associate us with daily fantasy. But it is good for the business, it's good for the brand, and it's good for these players, because this is how people learn about the players in the game of baseball and basketball these days. So I am for it, but they got to be very careful on how they do it.
You summed that up beautifully, because of the history of gambling and how baseball, forget about all the other sports, with Pete Rose and the relationship from the Black Sox, how it's very difficult to encourage that, knowing the history of the game. It is a really big fine line. Have a great weekend, my friend. We got some time off before the Golden Knights play again, so we'll get out there and catch a game together.
Let's do it for sure. Thank you.
All right, Josh Towers, Baseball Insider. His show on VSiN, the fact that he comes on here every week, we really appreciate it. Interesting what he said about Fenway and the history of playing there and what that means, and the best beds in all of baseball. Good night's sleep. Love going to Fenway Park as a young, crazy 16, 17. The first sports trip my dad ever let me go on with my friends. 16 years old, he let me get in a car with my buddies to go to Fenway Park. Looking back on that, and my dad's the most conservative guy I know, I cannot believe I convinced him to let me get in a car and drive from New York to Boston to go see the Yankees back in the day when it was vocal and violent to go to a baseball game in that rivalry back in the day. Coming up next, we'll talk to Gilbert Manzano, the cover story today. Cover story today at the Review Journal. He covers the Raiders. The schedule is going to come out here in about 15 minutes. We'll try to get something in here before the end of the show, but I'll be leading with that with Looney at the top of the hour. Canelo Alvarez and the six-month ban was that a slap on the wrist. Golden Entertainment Group, with all the PTs, your place to watch sports in the Valley.
I feel this is the thing to do. This is what I want to do. This is the organization that I want to be a part of, and I'm all in. I only live one time. This is something that I feel deeply, strongly about, and I'm going to do everything I can to put the Raiders back on track.
John Gruden, I love that press conference. I love the sound of Coach Gruden. And he is back, my longtime friend, now the head coach again of the Silver and Black. How exciting is that as we wait for hockey and the new schedule for the second round? Gilbert Manzano, kind enough to join us. He's got the cover story today at the Las Vegas Review-Journal on Canelo and the six-month ban. But, Gilbert, good to talk to you again. I want to start off also with the Raiders who you cover. We know when the London game will be, and the, obviously, bye week will come after the London game on October 14th. But still a couple of rumors about a few more primetime games, which will be good for the league and especially John Gruden and this bunch.
Yeah, I'm intrigued about that possibility of a Thursday night football with the Niners and the Raiders, you know, Garoppolo and Derek Carr and John Gruden going up against the Shanahan. Hopefully that could happen. I was hoping that could be the Monday night, maybe the second game to open the season, but I'll take a Thursday night football. But we'll see. It's a good schedule. We'll see how Gruden does. And I'm excited for the draft coming up next week. They got, you know, some chances of get some quality linebackers there, or even a defensive back. So I'm intrigued to see what Gruden does there for his first draft in 10 years, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, because, again, with all the quarterbacks now that are, you know, this is going to be clearly a run on quarterbacks in those first few picks. I'm assuming that the Raiders could either trade down and still get the defensive player that they want if another team wants to come into 10 and get an offensive player or a quarterback. But either way, John Gruden now working with Reggie McKenzie, with John Gruden's new staff here, should make, I would assume, for a better draft. Not that Reggie hasn't hit some home runs in the past with Carr and Khalil Mack, but the Raiders can't afford to get through those first two rounds without a couple of clear starters.
You're right there, JT. It's been a while since Reggie's kind of hit on the draft. You mentioned Khalil Mack and Derek Carr. That was 2014. That was 4 years ago. And you really saw all the holes and the weaknesses of the Raiders had a year ago. So, hey, with Gruden coming in to help out Reggie to, you know, get some more, you know, some home run hits here and there, because the good teams in the NFL, they draft pretty well in the late rounds, not just the first round, but the second and third round. You know, they come cheap, they help you out the salary, and it just really helps you overall. So hopefully Gruden, you know, has a good scouting in there. And I, like you said, the people are going to go after quarterbacks, so they can move down or even just take a really quality player that could have possibly gone top five if it wasn't for so many quarterbacks this year.
Gilbert Manzano is our guest from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Let's talk about your cover story today on the six-month ban for Canelo Alvarez. He really screwed things up. He took away a Cinco de Mayo on his own. I think this is a slap on the wrist. Typically, if it wasn't Triple G, if it was just a no-name fighter he was fighting, I think we'd see a year banned. From talking to all your sources putting this column together, talk about how Canelo feels and what message does this say to people that get caught with these failed drug tests in years to come in Nevada.
Yeah, JT, you know, it feels like it was kind of a slap in the wrist, you know, but the more I think about it, you know, it's not really that, you know, light of a punishment. Canelo's actually going to miss on a $20 to $25 million payday for not fighting on Cinco de Mayo. This guy fights only twice a year, Cinco de Mayo and Mexican Independence Weekend. So he usually, you know, racks up between anywhere to $30 to $40 million to fight him twice. So he cuts his salary in half. So I think that's a big penalty there. And, you know, the commission could have made a big statement by saying, hey, you failed two tests. That's the thing that kind of bothers me. He failed not one, but two tests. So he said, hey, we don't take that serious. I know you're a first-time offender, but your first time should have been after the first test. Why did you fail two? So that could have been 1 year. But, you know, most states in the country would have just looked the other way. They would have said, hey, we buy your excuse about contaminated beef. It's happened before. Let's keep the fight going. And it's a big hit on the economy of Nevada. So I think the commission was in a tough spot. Props to them to have really strict rules, because it said in the rules, intentionally or not, you're going to get suspension regardless. So I think the commission was just trying to kind of look good in some type of way where they're not, you know, looking like a joke and not following the rules. But also, you got to bring the money, and it'll be tough for the state not to have two big fights in the year. But, you know, it's on Canelo, though. Everything's on Canelo. It's not fair for Triple G, who could be stripped of IBF belt because he's not making a mandatory defense, so he's looking at the big money. You know, there's no fight in Las Vegas. It's a mismatch on Cinco de Mayo. So everything is all to blame on Canelo. But still, at the end of the day, he took a big hit by losing a big chunk of money, and he was suspended for 6 months.
Gilbert Manzano joins us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And Commissioner Bob Bennett was on before with T.C. Martin, before I came on, and they talked about the commission voted 5-0 to approve this request. So they came down, and I think your point is really important, the fact that Canelo is missing out on $20-plus million, and that is a part of this penalty, and that really hurts the fighter. Going forward with your contacts and how you know Canelo Alvarez, what do you think happens next, Gilbert? Because I think he instantly becomes a villain. He becomes the latest Mexican villain in the sport of boxing because of what he did to Las Vegas, what he did to Cinco de Mayo. Now, we live in a forgiving society when it comes to boxing, and there's been far worse people who have really broken the law and have done bad things. That's not Canelo, but a lot of fans have a bad taste in his mouth. Do you think it's going to take a long time for him to clean up his legacy again, or would a win against Triple G do that quickly at the end of the year?
Yeah, I think it's going to take some time. Like you said, he's not a bad guy away from the ring, but just in the ring, people never really embrace him, even from the Mexican community. He's not your typical, you know, scrapper, you know, leaves it out in the ring, blood, sweat, and tears, you know, had this story that he came from nowhere. People in Mexico kind of see him as a smug diva, and I'm kind of getting the sense here from boxing fans in the U.S., so he's not really a typical guy that you rally around. He's more of a pretty face. He's more of a flamboyant, flashy guy. He's very quiet, too. It's kind of hard to get a feel for him. But before this whole steroid thing came out, he wasn't really liked. He was just a big star, especially among the women. They love Canelo. Mm-hmm. And Mexico loves their fighters. But there was a divide there, especially when you saw Chavez Jr. come here to T-Mobile a year ago. A lot of fans gravitated towards Chavez Jr. because of what his dad did. His dad was a guy who fought anybody. He never made excuses. He was ready to you know, work and fight. But for Canelo, now he has to maybe show some of that Mexican grit that when he fights Triple G and he can't, I know a lot of people gave him flack for, I thought it was a smart fight. He was a guy who kind of maybe, I wouldn't call it running, but he was defensive. If he comes in for the rematch and he's more aggressive and he shows he wants to, you know, scrap it up with Triple G, convincing victory after that, he might gain some more fans out of that way. But it's kind of hard to do against Golovkin, but he is older. So I think it's all about what he does in the ring. Again, he has no issues away from the ring, you know, outside of the whole drug thing. But if he comes and he fights and he shows it that he's working hard and he wants to prove, I think the Mexican community and the entire boxing fan as a whole will embrace him again.
Gilbert Manzano, as we wrap it up. So finally, when does this fight happen, in your opinion? Late October, November? I'm upset because it's going to ruin an NFL weekend for me. It'll probably be a weekend where we're both on the road if the Raiders have a great game on a Sunday or if they're traveling somewhere cross country. But as long as Triple G wins his fight coming up in California, this thing is pretty much a lock by the end of the year, and it will be a super fight, correct?
Yeah, you saw in the statement from Golden Boy, they said Canelo's going to come back in September 15th. I think they already have a date in mind. Tom Lawler yesterday at the meeting said the plan is still to fight Canelo on Mexican Independence Weekend, so a year from their first fight. So I think they're all on the same page, Golden Boy. I even think Nevada already knows they're going to be at T-Mobile Commission. I think everybody's on the same page, especially that's why Ivanez Martirosyan was the opponent. He's not a guy who's risky. He's a guy who hasn't fought in 2 years. So he's just a guy coming in to give Triple G some work, and they'll have a fight in a particular amount. So I think everybody's on the same page. Expect a fight on September. Some kind of weird incident happens with Golovkin injury-wise or anything. If nothing happens on May 5th, they're all on board. And maybe you can see Canelo coming out at the StubHub Center and challenging Triple G like Triple G did a year ago at T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah, I think that would be smart for Canelo to get out there and to be ringside and get something going there to get everybody excited about the fight when it comes. Great work. I really enjoyed the column and the fact that you got back to us and came on. We'll have you on soon again. Appreciate it, Gilbert.
Sounds good, JT. Thank you for the time. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Gilbert Manzano, cover story today on Canelo. Also covers the Raiders. This Raiders coverage here at this newspaper is unbelievable. Michael Gelkin, Ed Graney, who does it, the guys who are out there pounding away talking Raiders football is fantastic. And I know that coming from the Raiders and talking to people in the organization, how impressed they are with the coverage that they're getting in Las Vegas compared to coverage they're getting in other places. Good Raiders coverage and the best boxing coverage in the country comes right here. We'll wrap it up here on the other side. Looney will join me at the top of the hour. Full night of NBA coverage coming up. LeBron's win. Greg Popovich will not be there tonight after the passing of his wife, Erin. Greg Popovich's wife died yesterday. He will not be at the Spurs-Warriors game. Will the Spurs answer for Pop and shock the Warriors?
LeBron, fadeaway jumper. Got it. Oh, goodness. 42 for LeBron James. 4.5 to go in the fourth quarter. Cavaliers 90, Pacers 82.
You know, LeBron had one of those games last night that you look at him and say, that was one of the all-time great games ever. It's his all-time high in the first quarter of a playoff game. He had 29 at the half and 40-plus points. And everybody's saying, well, how come we can't get that from LeBron every night in the playoffs? Why do we have to have on and off, on, off LeBron when the playoffs come? Well, it's tough to play great in every playoff game. Breaking news tonight, Joel Embiid starting game 3 for the Sixers against the Heat. He was probable. He went from unlikely to probable a couple of hours ago, and obviously that game now on TNT in the second quarter, Sixers up 37-33. We'll keep an eye on that. And the NFL schedule release is happening right now, 6 minutes, NFL Network. We'll give it out. We'll have the primetime games for you right out of the gate here at the top of the hour. So keep it here. Looney and I will go through the schedule. For me, this is Christmas. By tonight, I will have plane tickets. Not hotel rooms, not game tickets, but I'll have my airline schedule kind of moving in the right direction. You should too. It's a good day. Pick one game that you like your team on the road. Press click and buy a plane ticket. Months in advance. And go ahead and do it. Go see your team play on the road. Thanks to all my friends at PT's, the servers, the bartenders, the managers, the chefs, everyone behind this show every day with Interactive Sports Talk Radio. The JT the Brick Show brought to you by Golden Entertainment. We'll have the schedule coming up here, the release in a few minutes.